You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 2 of Commentary. Trek Star is a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Today is part 2 in our second series on Nicholas Meyer, this one looking at his movie career. And we're going to be talking about his first movie, Time After Time, which is an H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper time travel story.
Spoilers.
Today we are joined once again by Augie Alexi of Centuries and Sleuths Bookstore. How's it going, Augie?
Very good, very good.
Thanks for joining us again.
Yeah.
Now, just for people who didn't hear the last episode, can you briefly talk about your store, what it is?
Yes, we specialize in history and mystery books and biography, and kind of call ourselves the proactive book. One of the themes or mottos is that the place that makes history and mystery come alive, because we do have performances here, we have authors, we have discussion groups both in history and mystery. So it's unique in that sense that it's not just a retail shop. It's a place where, you know, I'm looking for people who really can get involved or want to get involved in what they're reading and expressing their points of view. I don't want to dissuade anybody who just wants to buy a book and get out of here. That's fine, too. But most of the activities we have are getting people who are involved in history, mystery, and biography.
It is a really cool bookstore, I have to say. And, you know...
You don't have to say it.
Okay, I don't have to say it.
You're not required by law.
No.
But it is cool.
But last time we were here...
And I'm not required to say that by law.
Last time we were here was for the sort of mystery element with Sherlock Holmes, and this time we're here more for the history side of it with Jack the Ripper.
Because everyone knows who did that.
Now, well, okay, I guess he falls under
so
both.
So it's still a mystery.
Okay.
This is even more appropriate.
So you're what they call a Ripperologist, correct?
Kind of, yes.
Which okay. means you love Jack the Ripper.
Uncertified.
So you love Jack the Ripper. You're a huge fan of his work.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'd say a big fan trying to find out who the hell he is or who he was.
Okay.
I hope.
And I take it you've read many theories.
Oh,
and
yes.
Do you have a particular theory that you...
I probably think it would be like an insignificant person that could have gotten away with things like that. I love the idea of it being the Duke of Clarence or maybe even Dr. Gull, who was, you know, the surgeon to the royal family with a problem. But it was probably, I mean, a person who could walk the streets of the East End without being noticed with blood on their body or a fresh set of new clothes. So, yeah, in fact, I have one of my friends who's passed away, Richard Moore, said that was the first question he was going to ask St. Peter when he got up there, you know.
So since this is a Star Trek show, you know, we've talked on the last episode about how you're not, you know, like a huge Star Trek fan or anything like that. But there is an episode of the original series called Wolf in the Fold.
Yes.
Which deals with Jack the Ripper. It was actually written by Robert Bloch, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because I've read his book on the Ripper, too.
Oh, he wrote a book on the Ripper?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that. So have you seen that episode?
Yes.
What do you think about it?
I really enjoyed it, especially the person who wound up being or taking on the character of Jack the Ripper. You wouldn't have expected it.
All right. Well, Time After Time is Nicholas Meyer's first movie, and it's about, H.G. Wells creates a time machine in which Jack the Ripper uses it to escape from the authorities and travel to modern-day San Francisco, which would be 1979.
Into a timeline in which H.G. Wells didn't write the time machine.
But
he
actually
made
created
one.
It, yeah. And so now H.G. Wells must follow him through time to stop him. Augie, what are your general thoughts on Time After Time? You a fan?
It plays with one another. One of my favorite subjects is time travel. Because, mm-hmm. again, we have the performances of Meeting of Minds where we have historical characters come and talk to me or talk to the moderator I have. So this is kind of, I don't know if I would have chose that character to come back. But, no, I think it's thrilling. It's exciting. And, you know, some of the psychological, again, perspectives on this. Like, I mean, as I said before, the character of Jack the Ripper was in heaven when he saw, you know, the loose living of the 1970s. I like the subject matter of Jack the Ripper. I like the setting with the concept of time travel. And there's not, he doesn't take too much of an opportunity, but there were things that you could double check in the history books to see, and especially when it came to was it Mary Steenburgen that played his wife?
Mm-hmm.
And that character...
Spoilers.
It was really, you know, was really true.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's the name of his wife, and she was a social, you know, social activist, women's rights. Now, if I'm right, she played a bank clerk, didn't she?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like she didn't get her inspiration until she met H.G. Wells. So
right.
that much I didn't investigate further. I mean, I got what I wanted to know out of my investigation. No, but it's an enjoyable piece of work.
Yeah.
There are several sequences in that movie where H.G. Wells finds himself in the future of politics and doesn't know exactly how far things have progressed. My favorite is when, you know, he says, I supported women's liberation. And she says, you don't anymore? And he's like, and you can see him trying to figure out how to respond. Like, no, of course I still do, because it's an ongoing process and not completed yet. It's like,
yeah.
It's a really funny moment. And it's the kind of bizarre comedy that could only happen from this context.
So you're a fan of it too, Max?
I'm a fan of a lot of things about this movie.
Yeah.
The design of the time machine, I am not a fan of.
Okay.
It's always been an ugly device. I don't know why everybody seems to think that giant wheel is a good idea. But, you know, aside from a few, you know, minor problems here and there, and the awkwardness of the pacing, which is mostly a time thing. It's sort of a relic of that particular moment in cinema. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm also a pretty big fan of this movie. I think more than anything, it's a lot of fun. Just the idea of, you know, the sort of the fish out of water concept of taking these characters from 19th century and bringing them into the present day. You know, where like the world is familiar to us, but the characters are, you know, sort of alien. I think that that's a concept which works pretty well, and it's something which works so well that Meyer decided to do the exact same thing over again, which we'll get into a little bit later. But in a lot of ways, this is kind of a cousin of Meyer's first novel, or second novel, the 7% Solution. It was actually based on a story by, I think his name is Carl Alexander, who was friends with Meyer, and he said that he took inspiration from 7% Solution when writing his book. And I think that's kind of interesting that his, you know, first work, at least in terms of writing as an author, and then his first movie are, you know, a pair. Well, let's talk about Jack the Ripper. Augie, now I know obviously being time travel involved and whatnot, this is not an accurate portrayal of Jack the Ripper. And I know that the if I'm not mistaken, the character is a fictional character. Would like
the image
John Lewis Stevenson, is that what they call it? But given the known facts about Jack the Ripper, does the let me just ask. Given the known facts about Jack the Ripper, does this story like fit into those?
I agree with Max on that. It's Meyer's imagination. On that part, maybe he could have done a little bit more work. I mean, he could have. And also, doesn't surprise you that this person in the 18, was it 1889, 88 or whatever, this character was in the circle of H.G. Wells.
Mm-hmm.
Which could, I mean, if he could have played on that a little bit better. But yeah, no. And if I'm right, wouldn't you say this is the first time David Warner played a villain in a major motion picture? Because I think he played in one of the Christmas carols, he played Bob Cratchit.
Did he? Huh. I guess this would be the earliest.
The earliest. And then you see him in Star Trek. Uh-huh. I mean,
he's a good villain.
He is. I mean, in Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a man you love to hate.
You know,
in his performances.
So, what about the idea of Jack the Ripper as a surgeon? I know that that's something which has been tossed around.
Yeah,
that's a bit.
Been like, one of the, you know, profile characteristics. But also, people had said that he could have been a butcher, you know, because of knowing where the certain parts of the human body were when he did his cutting, because his cutting didn't seem to be haphazard. So, yeah, I think the idea of being a surgeon was maybe that, I correct myself, that's probably one profile that he fit. Let me tell you, too, that this was, for me, as an individual and as a young person, was a shocking experience. As a young kid, I might have been as young as 11 or 12 when I first found out about this. Because you have the feeling that adults know everything. You know, even if you're trying to hide something from your parents, they find out about it somehow. And then when you read about this and hear about this, you know, this is, at that time, it was close to 100 years, and they hadn't found them. You know, like, where to? Some adults have not done their homework. You know, just the idea that this person was really out there and unidentified. Because at that time in life, when you're like 9, 10, 11, whether you like it or not, there's a beginning, and a beginning, a middle, and an end. And in the end, everything is resolved. And you're thinking that these are adults out there, and they haven't resolved it. And so it was a coming of age thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel? Did you just enjoy it as a story?
I actually feel the way you feel. I felt sort of like the opposite about the story, because I mean, like, I was aware of the Star Trek episode before I ever heard about Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
So when I learned about Jack the Ripper, I was like, oh yeah, Star Trek did a thing about that. I know how that story ends.
Yeah. That's
good. Yeah. So I didn't have that like open-ended quality. It's like, no, they got him. It took him a while, but they got him. They found him in the end. In space, they got him. They took him out of commission. In space.
Okay.
In the future.
What do you guys think about H.G. Wells? Are you a fan of his work?
He's a remarkable person. I mean, it's just, it was another one of those times, like, you wonder what was in the water they were drinking, because you had Arthur Conan Doyle, H.G. Wells, George Bernard Shaw.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, and these people maybe weren't old buddies, but they communicated with each other.
And Bram Stoker. Don't forget Bram Stoker.
Yeah, Bram Stoker. Exactly. And then I think the Inklings would have come a little bit later. But, I mean, it's like that kind of group. And it was really, because the world was smaller,
mm-hmm.
Just the fact that they met and knew each other was, excuse me, I always refer to it like a Warner Brothers movie. You know, but it's accurate, where Warner Brothers movies weren't that accurate, where they had these historical people coming together, like in the Santa Fe Trail.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do like Wells. And also, I've started, I've never finished it, his outline of history, his social activism, his almost fatalistic attitude towards history, very much in contrast to an Arthur Conan Doyle. You know, he followed a different drummer, even at that, you know, at that time.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Max? Are you a fan of Wells?
H.G. Wells?
Yeah.
Sure, I'm a fan of H.G. Wells.
I haven't read The Time Machine, but I know that they never refer to the main character by name. Yeah. And a lot of people speculate that the implication there was that he was saying that it was himself, you know? And I kind of thought that the movie was taking its cue from that, where he did write The Time Machine, for example, but it's like as if the book were written as part of reality,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if that works or not. But
I don't think it was like super spelled out. But it was there. There is an explicit statement in the movie that like I should be writing about this rather than living it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So like he does actually sort of leave present day San Francisco of the time, present day San Francisco, to go back in time and become a science fiction author,
mm-hmm.
to write about the future rather than being in it.
The only thing that conflicts me even with the book. The Time Machine, and maybe it's because of the times, they're always looking for mm-hmm. the future. I'm sorry, I would have gone back.
Oh, that's wrong. It's the wrong choice.
Yeah, wrong choice. Yeah. I would have always wanted to go back with the idea that I could be home by, you know, maybe 8, 9 o'clock, you know, in my bed, you know, without bugs and everything, you know, living in my own home. And then, you know, I'd be willing to get up maybe 8 o'clock in the morning, go back out, you know, and, you know, my time would be the Reformation, medieval times, maybe the Napoleonic era. But why would, you know, I don't really care about the future. I mean, I'm not going to be there. Okay, I know, I wasn't in the past either, but that intrigues me more than the future does. So it kind of tells you where my head's at, right?
Yeah, says the owner of the history bookstore.
Yeah, right, that's true.
It makes sense, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, one of the other things which I noticed, which, you know, kind of ties back to Star Trek, I guess, is, you know, I was never really that familiar with H.G. Wells or his work or anything like that. But at one point when he's describing his sort of utopian vision of the future, it seemed eerily similar to the utopian vision of the future which Gene Roddenberry proposed for Star Trek. You know, I wonder how influenced Roddenberry was by Wells.
People who aren't, you know, like super into Star Trek might not know it, but Star Trek's future is not just the future. It's a future that has not had a war between humans.
It's the idea.
Several hundred years. They don't have money anymore.
They
got rid of disease somehow. They banned it.
like the idea is basically like humanity has evolved to a point where there isn't even conflict among people, which is hard when you're writing drama, but you know,
not even when you're trying to choose a pizza topic. They all agree right away.
So
they're like, yeah, garlic, yeah, that works. Garlic. I'm on board with garlic. Are you on board? Everyone's on board with garlic. The Klingon wants sausage, but he's wrong.
Well, see, that's what I mean. I mean, you're meaning the humans
yeah. mm-hmm.
have accomplished this,
yeah.
not these,
not humans,
these aliens
slash. Anyone else.
Yeah. Anyone else. Okay.
Yeah.
There's then a lot of argument yeah. there.
Yeah, just the idea that in the Star Trek they seem to have a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just yeah. wait for it. But also, too, it's almost like the concept of non-interference is, you know, through time travel you've mm-hmm. made the realization that you can't change history.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. Like several times they've done movies on the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Where a person was there. He knew it was John Wilkes Booth, but for some reason, he just couldn't stop him.
I think there's like 7 episodes of The Twilight Zone that are about that.
Well, I know of one. Well, yeah, Twilight Zone does one, and I actually have, well, last night before I went to bed, I listened to One Step Beyond, which really wasn't just all these weird occurrences that.
Yeah.
Forecasted, you know, his assassination. But yeah, so what do you feel, being Star Trek people, do you think that plays a role? Like, why don't they want to interfere in society? Like, something is going perfectly wrong. They have the solution. Why wouldn't they change it?
I think the idea behind it is that they want to give societies a chance to evolve on their own. You know, they don't want to impose their own sort of values or technologies or whatever.
It's not like they want.
It's un-Victorian, I'll tell you.
It's not they want to blank. That's not it. It's not like their preference is that they don't get involved. Because I mean their preference is that they, you know, they swoop in, they say, "Oh, I hear you got a fatal disease. Well, we've got a cure for it." And then they smile at the camera and a little gleam off their teeth, and then they walk away, and then a bunch of groupies follow them. Like, obviously, they would love that, but it doesn't work that way because it's just not the way things function in the universe. I mean, like evolve is the word because evolution has a very particular way of doing things. And if you interfere in it, you're not just interfering with like a process that has like, you know, nuances. You're interfering with a process that has its own methods for dealing with problems. And when a problem arises within a system, if that system is incapable of dealing with that problem on its own, then an external force will actually make it possible to destroy the entire thing. The external element is almost always disruptive because the process is an internal structure. It's you know, component A, component B, and C all interconnected. If you bring in component, you know, omega, that screws everything else up because evolution is an interconnected web of connections and interconnections. And
but you can do it with the future, it seems like, because in time after time, isn't there purpose to keep Jack the Ripper out of it? So in other words, the future you can mess with.
Well, I mean, you can mess with anything. Like, you could – I mean, like, there's no reason to say that if you go back in time, you can't prevent the death of Abraham Lincoln. It's just that if you go back in time and prevent the death of Abraham Lincoln, things don't just turn out better.
Yeah,
things like turn out wildly changes. Different.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay. people say, like, "Oh, I mean, what if you went back in time and rescued Jesus?" And I think,
wait a minute,
that might be okay,
but
at the same time, well, I mean, like, we might end up in a world that's better or worse, but I'll tell you one thing: we will not recognize it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great analysis. Yeah. You blow the whole thing.
Yeah. it's like you go back in time, you say, "Jesus," 2,000 years go by, entire, you know, course of history is different, and you get into the present day, and like, you don't own a bookstore, you own a book Zeppelin. And it's like, I don't know how to use a book Zeppelin.
So what did you guys think of Malcolm McDowell's performance in this movie, his portrayal of Wells?
It was like he's a little bit... he was too innocent, too Victorian to be H.G. Wells. I mean, like, that's what makes H.G. Wells, it makes him peculiar, is he doesn't have a lot of the Victorian characteristics. It's just that he's too naive.
I guess it's kind of a weird balance because, I mean, he wasn't really of his time, but at the same time, it's like you're telling something from the perspective of something who's like really, you know, not of the time that you're in. So in a sense, I guess it's sort of metaphorical, taking him and putting him in the future or whatever, but then there's that weird balance between, you know, kind of like the reality of even like the weirdest, you know, most forward thinking, you know, person, you put them in the future, they're still going to be, you know,
I think he would have, again, this would destroy the whole movie, but I mean, I think he'd be more of an observer,
mm-hmm.
a note taker. He'd mm-hmm. keep a journal.
And you what do I see that, like, today. At the beginning, you know, yeah. he's, like, writing down everything, but then as it progresses, I guess he realizes
there are things that are flying
mm-hmm.
in the sky. You know, I predicted this, but... you know, where are the propellers?
Mm-hmm.
Again, but you couldn't, that would not make a movie.
Yeah.
But I would think that an H.G. Wells would have been more of an observer and a note taker, almost like a witness, so that when he came back to the past, boys, that's how we come back to get my time zones correct.
When he returned to the before,
he could write down what he had saw for the future.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't share it with people, but I'd start inventing a lot of things and putting out a lot of patents.
I'd like to see him try to patent the airplane. Yeah. Draws like an outline. This totally flies, you guys. I'm not even kidding. Just with this building, I'll show you.
Yeah. We saw your thing about the invisible man.
He's like, oh, that happened, bro. I saw it on TV. I'm not even. What's the TV? I don't know yet. I have to draw some pictures of that. Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily an anachronism that H.G. Wells was somewhat Victorian, because I mean, while he is a man who, you know, thinks about the future a lot, he's also a person of his era. I mean, like, he has an internal life. I mean, he also does seem a little bit sheltered, and being sheltered actually makes it possible for your brain and your imagination to go far into the future, but your personality is largely determined by your lifestyle, and his lifestyle was sort of
Victorian.
Yeah, it was London bound, you know. Uh-huh. He was a man of that moment, you know. I mean, like, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of person I am. Ultimately, I'm a guy who in the 90s, wore a jean jacket. You know, like I can't become a guy who in the 90s drove a motorcycle, no matter what I do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, he's a man of his era. So it makes sense to me that he would be somewhat Victorian. While he is, you know, capable of imagining this future, he's not entirely sure how to act in it.
Well, one other thing which I want to bring up before we finish, and that's the similarities between Time After Time and Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, which was also written by Nicholas Meyer. Augie, have you seen Star Trek IV? This is the one where they go back in time to present-day San Francisco to save some whales.
Yeah, I have. I okay. have seen that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are...
From Jack the Ripper. Not quite. He got into whale murder. It's really weird. He was hanging out with a Japanese guy. And he was like, oh, I hear that's really fun.
But, you know, the idea of, you know, it's again, you know, fish out of water story, you know.
Literally.
Literally.
No, it's time. A mammal. It's a mammal.
This time it's you know, people from the future coming back to 1986. But again, it's San Francisco. There's a lot of the same gags in there even. You know, structurally is very similar. You know, the idea of the time traveler falling in love with, you know, a woman who doesn't feel at home in her time and, you know, ends up, you know, coming back with him to what to the time period that he's in.
She has kind of a lame job. Yeah. She bails on it without a second thought.
That's very, very strange. The idea that, you know, he would agree to do that, you know, a second time. And I know that he was a little worried about it. He asked them to set, you know, the Star Trek movie in Paris and everything because he was worried about the similarities.
Mm-hmm.
But it's strange how close the two of those are. And I mean, he even talks about it in his book, like some of the gags which didn't work in Time After Time, which he ended up cutting out, he then revisited in Star Trek IV. So yeah, I mean, for those listeners who are fans of Star Trek IV, if you want to see sort of an early version of that, a first draft.
Nobody likes Star Trek IV.
So any final thoughts on Time After Time?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the... Enjoyed it so much, as I told you, I've got the soundtrack to it, and I do have it. I think probably a video of the movie too. So yeah, I guess I'd say I like it.
No,
and I'm here, you know, talking to you about it. So yes, I enjoyed it as a movie, a concept. I could have probably done better, but you know, I didn't have the money. I liked it. I liked it.
What about you, Max?
It's fine. It's an acceptable movie. I find stories where things get screwed up scientifically irritating, and I'm really irritated by the way Jack the Ripper is killed in this movie, because it's very strange. His weird like non-dramatic disintegration.
Mm-hmm. But they did set that up earlier, and it plays dramatically in the whole. In the chess element and whatnot.
But. Sure, it's a frustrating sequence of events. And you know, as a person who focuses on the science, I'm frustrated by the idea that he could sit there in the time machine and then see all of these things happening right in front of him, and nobody in that entire, you know, 100 years or so looks at the time machine and goes, "Why is that guy sitting there?"
Yeah.
How long has he always been there? How come he isn't covered in bird poop and dust? He should be, right? That makes sense.
Well, I was also very fond of this movie. I think it's an interesting first film, especially for Meyer. More than anything, I just think it's fun. You know, just the idea of taking these people and putting them into modern day society. I think that's an interesting way to look at how crazy modern day society is in a kind of particular way. So, yeah, I enjoyed the movie quite a bit, too.
Yeah, life in 70s San Francisco sure is weird these days.
Well, yeah, I really kind of like the way Star Trek, even post time after time, has done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like to see Spock with, wearing a knit cap to cover up his ears. and observing these people on the bus and how they behave.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the guy who's going to, is it the hoodlum or something like that? But you just don't do that when a Star Trek person's on board your bus, you know?
With the the radio or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was actually in his book. He talks about how...
Really bothers me so much, that scene.
he doesn't like that because it's he thinks that Spock's being fascist, but that...
he is. He absolutely is. He's like, oh, you're being irritating. Oh, I know. I'll just knock you out with a violent action.
But in Meyer's memoirs, he talks about how that he brings up that specific gag as being something which didn't work in Time After Time. There was a scene because
who would believe H.G. Wells like just using his cane to crack a dude's knee?
The way that
he's being irritating on a bus.
The way that it worked in Time After Time was H.G. Wells was walking down the street, like he was waiting at a crosswalk. And there was an Asian guy with a huge radio was blaring rock music. And, Wells was like, just tries to, run away from him as quickly as he can, whatever, because it was so terrible. And then, later on in the story, a while later, he's talking to Mary Steenburgen, I think, and she says, what kind of music do you like? And he says, anything but Oriental. And... he said it just didn't play. People forgot about the thing earlier. They didn't understand what was going on. So he cut the joke and then recycled it and put it into Star Trek IV. So anyway, Augie, where can people find you?
7419 Madison Street, Forest Park, midway between Harlem and Circle on the north side of the street. And I like to call it a blood red awning, but it's burgundy and got a lot of neat activities going on. And I think it's a good setting for what we're out to do.
Definitely, for sure. For those people in Chicago or those people coming to Chicago, be sure to come to Forest Park and check it out because it's really great.
Thank you.
That's pretty much it for today. As always, you can find us at commentarytrackstars.com or on Twitter at @comtrackstars, or you can check us out on Trek FM. Leave a comment on the forums.
Presumably where we are now.
Yep. And we will be back next week to talk about Nicholas Meyer's second movie, The Day After.